Welcome to Crossroads, the infrastructure podcast. This is your host, Andrew Vitelli, senior editor of Energy in the Americas for InfraLogic. Today, we will have one big, beautiful podcast to discuss the sweeping domestic policy legislation that passed the House last week. And we have Julian Dumoulin-Smith, a managing director and research analyst in Jefferies Power, Utilities, and Clean Energy Equity Research Group. Julian, welcome to Crossroads, and great to have you on.
Andrew, thank you so very much. I appreciate the opportunity to join you here on Crossroads.
Julian, can you briefly tell our listeners what Jefferies Power, Utilities, and Clean Energy Equity Research Group does?
We are an equity research shop. We fundamentally rate stocks buy, sell, hold, right? So it's fairly transparent in that way. But really, at its core, you've got to understand what's going on in the space, right? We take views specific to the sector, trends, and obviously politics around that in terms of deciphering what that means for the stocks.
So the main reason that I'm really excited to have Julian on the program today is because I think he's the perfect person to talk about the sector in light of this one big, beautiful bill. I think a lot of people in the sector are eager to read all of your equity notes, and it's always a point of discussion. A secondary reason I'm very excited to have Julian on is because we actually grew up right around the corner from each other. We went to high school together. So it's good to have an old friend on the podcast.
Yeah, incredible how the world turns out this way, isn't it?
It is. Who knows? There must be something in the water around that part of Hastings-on-Hudson that drives people to go into the energy industry.
Totally.
So before we dive into the substance, can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background, how you ended up in this part of the sector?
Look, I got involved in the space really as a function of looking at the intersection of politics and economy and really what people's daily decisions are being made of, right? I mean, energy faces us constantly, and more to the point, it's really a technology sector, right? It is ever evolving. It's hard to see its manifestation in any one singular way, but actually that's been the biggest pleasure through this all, is just to see how vibrant and dynamic the situation is. It is not static. And even in my short 2 decades in the space, basically, it's changed dramatically. And, you know, frankly, I think that the rate of change is going to persist.
So last week, we published a story on the Republican-led House of Representatives passing legislation narrowly that we quoted somebody calling it a nuclear bomb for the clean energy industry. I know you described it as a sledgehammer to the Inflation Reduction Act signed a few years ago. Julian, how bad would this bill be? And right now it's just a proposal, if it became law.
Look, I mean, I think there's a tale of many different worlds here, right? I mean, how difficult would it be? It really depends on the end market you're looking at. Look, to take the industry expectation, right? I mean, people were expecting a scalpel, right? They were expecting nuance. They were expecting a general phase out, right? But this is next level, right? Admittedly, right? And I think in many respects, what you need to remember about this is that a lot of the changes were done in the middle of the night, right? So at first, there was a sense of a tangible sense of relief a couple of weeks ago when it was first introduced by some constituencies saying, look, they could have gone further. Then we saw the middle of the night changes from the Freedom Caucus. That really changed the MO, right? They inserted a bunch of like twists, right? And I think implicit in a lot of this, I just want to call it out. There is a broad expectation that the next administration fundamentally extends these credits, right? And so as long as you're able to survive, shall we say, the next 3 to 4 years, you've got a backdrop that you can at least hope the Senate Finance Committee, et cetera, extends this again, which has been the cat and mouse game that has existed for renewable tax credits for over 2 decades. Now, right? This back and forth, the seesaw of tax credits. So that's where a little bit of the nuance was. By having this accelerated phase out at the end of this administration, it leaves you going into the next administration without that phase out, right? Without that understanding of what was to happen. And look, we've seen these things expire before and get retroactively renewed, etc. So look, it's not the end of the world. And certainly it reduces the scope of what's at hand. But I also wouldn't call this thing anything close to a scalpel. This is much closer to that sledgehammer. I mean, there's a lot of nuance embedded within this. Honestly, I think that folks have to appreciate.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right. If you read the tone of coverage, both in terms of your letters, in terms of my report, our report, after the initial draft came out, there's a lot of optimism. A, because it wasn't so bad, at least compared to expectations. And B, I think there was a thought that some of the threats, and the FEOC is one we'll get to, were maybe a little bit unintentional and would be ironed out by the full House. That once a handful of House Republicans who have been supportive of renewables got their hands on the bill and said, hey, listen, we have to fix these few things to make them more workable. What came out of the House would be something that was better, that was not an improvement in current law, worse than current law, but better than expected. And I think there's a lot of shock in the industry that they went the opposite direction, that what ultimately passed the House was worse than the original proposal and really didn't fix some of the concerns. I mean, is that lining up with what you've seen?
Yeah, Andrew, look, here I would flip it this way, right? People thought that what you're going to see originally was the worst and it was only going to get better from there. And the fact they saw real backpedaling there drove caution about what happened in the House, but also caution about who's going to step in the Senate, right? I mean, the degree to which this was, you know, effectively pushed back, right? People had sent all these letters to care about clean energy, and yet at the end of the day, it all fell over when push came to shove, when Trump got involved. That's what really gave people pause, not just about the House process, but even about the Senate process. You can sign letters all you want. How real is real? And so I think that's what you saw some capitulation around. But again, look, I want to stress, when you think about the different end markets here, it's not just the utility, it's not just solar writ large, it's not just wind writ large. It's about breaking it down into the individual silos, right? The smaller scale solar, right? The residential, the commercial end markets. That's what you're most concerned about here. Like when you think about larger scale renewables and specifically larger scale solar, look, a lot of that's going to persist simply because you don't have alternatives, right? You've got demand growth. There's going to be a build out. And so honestly, look, who pays for it? Again, we talk about the Inflation Reduction Act, right? It's simply going to be inflationary on those people buying it, right? So again, whether it's a data center or some other reshoring manufacturer or what have you, or frankly, just end consumers, right? They're just going to end up paying more of that fully loaded price as you build it out, because it's not like you're going to pivot at this point saying, oh, well, it was a subsidized base, and so therefore I'm going to pivot back to a fossil alternative. At this point, the fossil alternatives have also inflated to a level that I don't think it's as fungible a decision tree as people would like to claim, right? The reality is it's just going to raise prices, and more to the point, those prices are going to be borne by consumers, and that's just going to play itself out. So if you were to bifurcate across the spaces, look, the utility scale sector is going to be more intact than people care to admit, mostly because demand is going to be met with the build-out, and you're going to still see a lot of utilities and industrials move forward with their roadmaps just as much as you would think. Now, I think it's on the smaller end of the spectrum that you got to be concerned. And then adjacent to that, to hit the wind market in brief, look, I think the wind market's been stymied by permitting even before this whole IRA narrative got off the ground, right? I mean, the issues that we are seeing about just being able to get wind done is the bigger headwind here than it is IRA. Now, look, again, I'm going to stress this point. We're all making the assumption that the next administration, and you're effectively punting that to the next administration with a year-end 28 phase out, right? The next administration is going to either extend this to some, you know, modest degree, or really going to be responsible for the full impact of what that does to consumer pricing. That's the critical nuance here that you got to watch. The Trump administration is going to keep the tax credits in place effectively at full levels through the pendency of the administration. So in many ways, there may be an ironic twist. You'll have a pull forward of demand, right? Well, get it while it's hot. Get it while the tax credits exist. And you may actually have an acceleration of activity, depending how it's ultimately structured, in the next couple of years. And it could really fall off in pro forma 29, for instance.
Well, that's interesting, because I have been reading some pretty dire predictions. I read a white paper by Segway Sustainable Infrastructure this morning, for example, that said that this would result in half the solar, wind, and storage set to go online between now and 2033, which is more than, you know, 500 gigawatts, to be scrapped. It sounds like you think there aren't going to be a lot of cancellations. It's just more going to affect the pricing, PPA pricing, consumer pricing, et cetera, that these are going to be built either way.
Well, look, Andrew, let's be very careful, because I see a lot of these forecasts that are pointing out into the 2030s. Look, that's really where a lot of the investment was going to get, like, the magnifying effect of the tax credits, right? In the near term, look, the reality is you have the tax credits to 28, and you're effectively living to the next administration. That's going to dictate the pace of adoption, right, in many ways, right? Because you're going to have technology, again, emphasis on technology cost curves coming down, and you're going to have the benefit of the credits. And that double whammy really should enable adoption in subsequent periods. To me, you know, the nuance on how much gets done really come boils down to, do we get some degree of latitude from the Senate, right? You've got these nuances from China as it pertains to the FEOC, a foreign entity of concern. It basically is a supply chain question about not just looking at components, but where do you get your subcomponents? Where do you get your critical minerals from that go into these products? You know, how aggressive they want to be in enforcing it, or how ambiguous the administration wants to be and how timely they are in proclamating some of these underlying rules, that's going to dictate the outcome of clean energy just as much as the IRA at the superficial level will. If you don't give clarity on what procurement and supply chain needs to look like, it'll also stymie the sector. So again, it's too early to tell quite how far it's going to go. But look, I am not going to subscribe to these dire forecasts about the space. in the medium term. In the longer term, sure, but I also really want to underpin this, right? I mean, you are seeing active inflation of fossil alternatives in a way that, like, let's not kid ourselves, energy is going to be meaningfully more expensive in the future. So I get that the credits going away has an impact in an isolated static world, but it's a dynamic world out there. And the reality is it's going to be inflationary across the board. And frankly, I would lean in and say that for as much as you're going to see renewable companies price up, you're going to see the fossil companies price up as a function of this too. Everyone's going to take advantage of the situation to say, look, I'm going to charge more. I think that's the backdrop.
Well, you brought up the FEOC. I think that's a really interesting, the foreign entities of concern provision. I think that's a lot of the panic in the industry has focused around that. I think the goal there was we don't want Russia, China, Iran, North Korea investing in these companies, owning these companies, if they're going to get tax credits. I think the concern of the industry is that it was written so broadly that no company with any secondary connection could feel confident that they can get those tax credits. I mean, do you think there's going to be clarity? And what would it mean if there wasn't?
Look, I think if there's not, like, I think what you're going to see is folks running for the door to get in before these things go into effect, right? FEOC, as it turns out, again, depends on the permutation of the bill you're looking at, whether it's year end or a year out or what have you. The point is that FEOC provisions would only go in after a period of time. So there's an exemption period. Let's call it a safe harbor. So you're going to see a lot of people kickstart construction of projects in name or otherwise in the next handful of months in order to get past these exemptions. So really, in many ways, this is also a tale of whether you're a large incumbent that's well-prepared with a balance sheet and working capital to speak to, or if you're a smaller developer, again, emphasis on small versus large. Look, the smaller guys are not going to want to put down the capital. They don't have access to the capital to go start construction. And so therefore, they're going to be much more impacted by these provisions, right? Conceivably, you know, you've got larger companies out there who are going to step in and say, look, I've gone out, I put capital down, I've now effectively ensured that everything I'm doing is going to be compliant from an FEOC perspective through 2028. That's not my fight to fight, right? And so I think to a substantive extent, you're going to see market consolidation, right? This sector had become much more competitive in recent years, right? That's a secondary effect of the IRAs. It's become much more competitive. And I think as a function of this undoing in part, is actually it's going to make the sector less competitive, right? And you're going to see consolidation among some of the entrenched competitors. Now, there was probably some degree of an organic consolidation and attrition that was happening and is happening anyway, to be fair. But I think this is going to accentuate that outcome. Because again, you are going to need to move decisively in order to lock in and quote unquote safe harbor your credits through the end of 28, to lock in and make sure you've gotten this exemption from FEOC, and more to the point, to lock in and make sure that you got your projects going in terms of what's being called tax credit transferability. And again, tax credit transferability is really another key linchpin to the reforms here, in as much as if you can't sell the credits, and most of these companies are unprofitable at their core because they're project subsidiaries, look, they need to be able to monetize credits. And the market is not deep enough to go back to the historical forms in which they've monetized credits. You have to have that latitude. So effectively, in some ways, another way to sink the space has been to stymie transferability, which is another thing this bill seeks to do in part. And so that's why, again, it's not just the phase out, it's the nuance on FEOC and it's the nuance on tax credit transferability that really hamstrings the industry depending on how it's actually implemented in the final bill here.
That's interesting. Our listeners will know we've talked a lot about transferability. It's been a huge success story since the IRA, with various structures emerging to allow investors to get involved, to monetize those credits and everything. Before we leave FEOC, I do want to say we really kind of scratched the surface. It's a very complex topic here that kind of deserves its own podcast. I'm not sure. We don't have anything planned, but I do recommend, I don't usually recommend other podcasts, but I will recommend one that I listened to this morning, The Currents podcast, which is Norton Rose Fulbright. They put out a episode devoted to FEOC on May 22nd. So if listeners want to learn about that topic in more depth, that would be a good one to check out. Now, you mentioned transferability. I mean, how much of a concern is there in the industry if that goes away? Is all of a sudden a lot of these tax credits just going to be theoretical?
I wouldn't call it theoretical. I would say we go back to a market that's more traditional. We call it tax equity. And I think that's where we're going to go. You know, in many respects, you go back to that and the banks step up and effectively monetize on their behalf, on a sponsor's behalf, the tax credits. And so that's a viable avenue to go down. Again, admittedly, it becomes very much limited if you want to do a lot of it, right? What's the tax capacity of the banking and financials industry to be able to get this done is a very relevant conversation point. But again, I think the bigger conversation on transferability ends up being, look, if you're going to use tax credits as part of like government policy, not just in clean energy or otherwise, there's a cogent argument to be made that you want to move towards transferability writ large. You don't want to take a step back, right? So I think ultimately the financial services industry overall is actually behind the idea that like even though they stand to benefit, there's a real narrative that you want to enable transferability. You want to be a broker rather than necessarily just enabling it in your own niche using your own tax capacity. This issue matters a lot, and it matters not just for the core deployments of storage and solar and wind, but it really matters also for like capturing manufacturing tax credits themselves. So again, I think that's important. And adjacent on the FEOC, people were expecting FEOC for months going into this revision, right? This was not surprising in the least. I think the twist on this all, frankly, is more about where we're going around some of these other arguments around, well, look, let's go to subcomponents or critical materials. I mean, to what extent, if you start going down this rabbit hole in clean energy, again, just think about the broader implications. You are going to stymie the ability for industry to manufacture before it gets going. You talk about reshoring, sure, but like the difficulty here is if you start to create this as a precedent, the next industry that you want to take down, you impose the same kind of restrictions, and you end up in a very difficult place to actually do this, right? Again, how quickly and swiftly can you move your supply chain? And by the way, this is for an industry that already predicated on IRA was already moving away from the use of China to begin with because it was incentivized under IRA a few years ago. So again, like I don't want to overstate the issue, but again, it's an important one regardless of whatever sector you're in to watch this because the ramifications in adjacent sectors are quite real.
Absolutely. And when you look at the tax equity versus tax credit transfer market, when the IRA was passed, the tax equity market was, I don't know, $20 billion, what have you. And the thought was, well, transfer will kind of balance that out. Some of that will go to transfer. Really, the tax credit market or the tax equity market stayed the same. And then a massive transfer market grew alongside it. And I think, first of all, maybe that's why it was targeted, because they saw savings there. But that's also why a lot of people in the industry are thinking, can traditional tax credit now just absorb all of that growth? Are we going to have the tax equity market double in size? And I think there's a lot of skepticism there.
Well, Andrew, look, I think the other piece I go back to, this is where the incumbents win. This is where those with balance sheets and have put down capital win. If you're able to safe harbor and preserve the integrity of the transferability, as is already and continues to be proposed, even in the most stringent versions of this bill, you can get the exemption on FEOC and you can get the exemption on the transferability if you start your projects now. And honestly, the largest players already have. They did it as of year in 24 because they saw this coming. They saw the election happen. In the 4Q last year, they said, look, we're going to go safe harbor everything under the Biden era rules, Section 45, Section 48, et cetera, et cetera. The point is, all of this was already done with those that have balance sheets. And so the arguments are a lot of this is impacting those that don't have the ability to put down the capital to, quote unquote, start a project. Again, let's come back to one big other change that we're expecting here. And this is going to be the so-called place in service requirements, right? The idea that you need to finish a project by year in 28, right? This itself is probably the most anathema to the space. If I think that there is one glaring change, right? Again, we talk about a lot of different twists here, but I think this is probably the most cogent one to focus on. Why? Because look, the industry is constantly struggling with permitting. Permitting reform is it's a bipartisan subject. It's a subject that transcends energy technologies and is no stranger to renewable energies. If you think that renewable energy is coasting along on permitting, you're kidding yourself, right? I mean, it's not limited to the fossil sector, right? And I think because of those issues, that's going to resonate with folks who want continuity. Look, it's not going to be a race to finish projects by year in 28 when you're facing a bevy of different permitting issues. It makes no sense. It's going to impede real project development. It's going to create, the key term here is business continuity. You want to have visibility that you can continue to tap in these tax credits despite putting reasonable, continuous efforts into finishing projects and have the latitude to say, look, if you slip by a few months, you don't use it or lose it, right? And that really, I think, has some degree of traction as in a space where the entire energy sector is increasingly facing permitting issues. It's not like this is getting better. It's not like it's poised overnight to change, right? I think that's where this whole narrative energy permitting came from. But more to the point, in this manifestation, that's why it's going to get traction when it goes to the Senate. And ultimately, I would argue that's one of the most important things to look for, is they're going to give you the latitude to say, look, if you do face issues, finish it the subsequent year, or more to the point, give you a little bit. That was the whole idea also partially behind having a phase out over the subsequent years to give people latitude. But again, that idea that you need a place in service by year in 28 or what have you, that's probably the most important needle mover here in the next few weeks.
That's definitely something we have heard a lot of. This would create a binary risk where if you miss it by one day, you get nothing or you completely miss out on the credit. And that's going to affect how these projects are going to be able to get financed in certain cases. This is going to affect all types of financing. And I think, again, it's probably something, I wouldn't say it benefits anybody, but that the larger players are maybe able to weather more than the smaller players. So you talk about the bifurcation. This is another example of that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. Look, I think another angle here, if you want to like keep going down this avenue, is to think about what's next, right? When you think about the credits here and what avenues get targeted. Look, I think residential solar in that space is really going to be one of the big question marks that play out. Because in this bill, look, they've taken out Section 25D, which is for consumers. That went by the wayside first. And then secondly, now we're talking about, are they going to get rid of leasing structures? I mean, this is going to be where some of the hardest felt debates and fights are going to play themselves out here in the next few weeks. In many superficial ways, people can confront solar, not because they go out into the desert and find these things, but they see them on people's homes. And while that's not necessarily the most efficient way to go about it, it's the most tangible way to both impact the industry in a way of saying, I did something by removing the policies that enable that, A, or B, conversely, by sustaining that, right? So again, that's where this hits home. That's what is the biggest debate out there. And frankly, look for the nuances around leasing solar to really get hashed out intensely. And again, it's not obvious which way the cookie's going to break on this one, but that's going to be the biggest pain points as you guys track data points across the space in the next handful of months.
We haven't even gotten through all the possible negatives, all the possible harms to the industry. Before we end, I do want to focus on some potential positives. Are there any areas where the final bill that made it out of the House was an improvement? Are there any potential winners? I know you put out a note recently about nuclear as one example of that.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think nuclear has got some small... Look, they fought for and got back some of their interest. Again, when you think about who's the key players here, especially in the Senate, you're going to see that. And again, you think about place in service. No, I am not finishing my nuclear plant by any given time frame, and that's not conceivable, right? And more to the point, extending that out and keeping the nuclear industry afloat had been a big mandate earlier, and that was a big compromise earlier. And so not surprised to see that. Renewable fuels, right? Again, you go back to the farmers and the ethanol producers, right? Think about them. They got an extension in this bill. It's not an accelerated phase out. They actually got an outright extension. So again, like this bill is not all bad for everyone, right? You got to look at the nuances. Yes, at the end of the day, the nuclear piece didn't necessarily survive. Look, the manufacturing, advanced manufacturing credits are not necessarily going to phase out as fast either, right? Again, I think the core focus there will be, there is going to be a little bit more latitude there. Again, even though you implement some of these FEOC constraints that limit who can participate. That's sort of the silver lining. Look, the biggest silver lining here is simply that demand is still growing, right? Like if this was happening in a different environment in which people were much more price sensitive, we'd have a much different conversation. But because you've seen the cost of renewables increase tremendously over the last years, even net of IRA, that might sound counterintuitive to people, but that's the reality on the ground, right? You're seeing permitting issues. The inability for supply to keep up with demand is what's driving the pricing higher and meaningfully higher in the last couple of years. And it's only going to trend higher on the back of that. Interest rates, capital costs, frustration and tariff-related permutations have all stymied the sector. Execution's a real problem. Let's talk about execution. Let's talk about what else is out there. And I want to rehash this a little bit. It's about how these rules actually get implemented. It's about having labor availability and having the visibility on what you want to do. Because it's not just one day, hey, look, here are the new rules, go and have at it. If it was that simple, sure, the industry would have not as much of a problem. But the reality is that you're going to do this, and then you're going to go hash out in front of the IRS a bunch of the corresponding rules. That's a problem. That's an implementation difficulty that what? So we're going to sit and wait a year or two to figure this out, right? Look under the IRA. It took a couple of years for even the Biden administration to hash this stuff out, right? So the idea that the Trump administration is going to have some sort of courage to move decisively and swiftly, look, they're not going to have the incentive. And I think that's going to be the secondary impact that we need to be watching for here as far as what the impacts are. And again, I think the interesting twist is, and maybe this is another nice point to try to pass it back to you on, is the biggest year for data center build out is going to happen to be 28 from what I can tell. And that 28 is going to happen to be when projects are incentivized to finish construction. So the big question is, if you can give people the clarity to run with projects and safe harbor and move forward as anticipated, even under this refined bill, you're going to see a big build out 28. But again, the difficulty is between the FEOC procurements, between the transferability issues, and frankly, given the litany of implementation issues, just of getting clarity out of IRS, you may very well punt the ability for this industry to respond in a timely fashion. Labor is not easy to come by. Construction workforce and engineering workforce is not necessarily ready to scale up when there are so many other infrastructure sectors ready to roll. And I think that's the biggest issue here, is you can't move on a dime. And so amidst the backdrop of seeing the data center demand boom really, I don't want to use the word crest, but certainly reach a new peak in 28 and have the pull forward, you're going to have a big build in that year, even under this permutation of the bill. The question is, can you actually get it done given all the corresponding follow-ups that are going to be required after the IRA actually passes?
Well, this is, when you talk about renewables, certainly an industry that has some experience working against ticking clocks and deadlines and political uncertainty. So while the last few years of the IRA have removed that a little bit, I think that the industry, it's not unfamiliar territory having that deadline that they don't know whether it's going to get extended. That said, I think people are watching very nervously to see what comes out of the Senate. And I think a lot of confidence and sanguinity was shaken by the fact that some of the renewables backers in the House that they expect to be stalwarts against this type of a rollback either slept through the bill or switched sides or didn't show up. I think we heard a lot about the 15 Republicans who signed a letter saying that they should not roll back the IRA, and that didn't end up being the firewall that people were expected. Well, Julian, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It was great to have you on. And once this is all settled down and whatever bill is ultimately passed, we'll have to have you back on to make sense of how things sorted out.
Absolutely. Hey, thanks, Andrew, for the opportunity. Appreciate it to you and your guests and listeners here. Be in touch anytime. We publish a daily slew of missives ourselves here on the space. So thank you again for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
They are all must-reads, Julian. So I always look forward to getting them in my inbox.
Very kind. Take care, everyone. Thank you.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning into Crossroads. If you enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast player. And please give us a 5-star rating so others can find our podcast. This has been Crossroads.